Near FM.
Hi, and welcome to the International Writers Network. And as usual, we have a very special guest for you, a writer that is going to blow your mind. But don't hear it from me, hear it from the writer itself. This is a platform where we celebrate writers, and who more to be on the platform with us today is Oscar Samuel. And when I asked for his bio, I want you to listen to this. My mother said I didn't want to be born and refused the breast causing her to have her milk drained before becoming septic. Now, at the minute I read that sentence, I said, this is a man that's going to revive the land with his word. So, Sam Ostron, it's great to have you on the platform. You came into the world with a bang, with an attitude. And that attitude only signifies people who are going to use their word. They're not going to bow down to the system. So tell us a bit about yourself before we start talking about your work, please.
Yeah. Well, okay. From my earliest recollection of myself, I kind of blew myself. They used to call me like a big man and bad man when I was little because I was kind of a rebel. I used to escape from the infant school. When I was like 5 years old, and police used to bring me back like 1 o'clock in the morning. You know, my mum used to scold me and get really upset. Later on, I found myself in foster care. Maybe I was a bit too much to handle. I came back to Leicester City, where I went to Mayflower School. Didn't do any work in the juniors apart from one piece of work that was a poem for a magazine that I got into the magazine. Called The Tramp. I didn't do much writing for another maybe 15 years. And when I did start writing, it was mostly like raps and things like this. I was well read by that time. I read all anthropology by Augustus Rogers and people like Drusilla Andrews and Chek Antiop and Ivan Sertimer, historians like that and so on. Marcus Garvey's biography and Malcolm X. So I kind of fueled my rebellious nature, you could say, being someone that didn't follow the status quo. Later on, found myself in the hands of the law. I did 20 years. I say 20, it was actually 18, but you know, they brought me from abroad where I did a little bit of time waiting to be extradited and so on. So I started writing in jail. And probably got more adjusted to what I wanted to say and how to say it. You know, I won't say I perfected anything, but I don't really follow, you know, the proper formats and curriculum and so on. I just like to say what I need to say and get it out there, you know. So a good friend of mine called Cerline Braithwaite, she introduced me to publications. They do a lot of things for writers, mostly black writers, I believe. And she herself has, you know, offered a few books on there. She also, I think she's in charge of, she owns Britain Got Reggae, something like that. So she put me in touch with these people and I started writing. And, you know, my book should have been out maybe 2 weeks ago, but I've been a bit slow with my illustrations that I want to give them. So it should be out shortly. Your World, My Mind, that will be the title. So that's a little bit about me. Over to you. Any more questions?
Yes. You know, it's just fascinating to say that you've read all these things. You call yourself a rebel, but really and truly, people become rebel when they don't fit into the status quo of life. So it means that we're going to have some imaginative that's going to blow our mind about people who rebel against the system that they're involved in. So that's actually quite challenging. The best writers have always rebelled against the system and said things that they didn't. So yeah, kudos to you and to all those who came around and support you, including your mother. And I wanted to ask you, that title of your new, would I call it an anthology?
Yeah,
anthology of poetry. Tell us how you got that.
I basically was in jail when I did a lot of my writing and perfected a lot of the writing to a certain degree. And I was in jail, incarcerated. Obviously, I wasn't in the world in the real sense of being in the world. I was more or less buried alive, but the only thing I had really was a pen and my imagination and my escapism through that. At the same time, being the kind of person I am, I kept up with politics and social affairs and so on. So a lot of my writing leaned towards the things that I didn't like about the system, things like that, or things I wanted to highlight. So your world, basically, you're out there in the world. I don't like what I see. And there may be little bits I do like that I've written about in a romantic way, but your world, my mind, that's how that kind of came about, you know? So and being a person that kind of lives in his head, I'm still in that kind of space to a degree, you know? I'm a kind of a nomadic person. I move from place to place. I never stay anywhere too long. And I suppose I'm seasoned in different cultures and attitudes and the politics of, you know, different countries and so on. So, yeah, that's how that came about.
All right. Listen, that sounds like something we need to talk about. So how long did it take you to put this set of work together?
It took me a while because while you're in jail, you have to be careful what you write, because you do get profiled. And although my profile was already, they said I had too much influence in the jails, and you know, I became a Muslim at 9 years old, so they probably found that like this person is kind of not following the status quo, he could be a danger to us, right? Because they like to look at Islam in a certain sense which they can digest and which they can present to the world to justify the things that they do. So I took a bit of time. I didn't write down too many things. I remained a little bit diplomatic about how I put things down. So it took a bit of time. And then I remember I had a whole file of work that went missing because they changed the computers in the computer rooms and didn't tell anybody and just didn't really care. And everything got, you know, taken away and new computers were there and our work was missing. So I went into myself a bit. I didn't want to write for a while. And then I lost a few of the pieces moving around jail to jail. You know, they said move around as a cattle prisoner for a while. So, you know, that's a bit, being black in jail, being Muslim in jail, being a cattle prisoner in jail, it was like a treble whammy, you know what I mean? So I would get into writing and I'd have a few months where I'd write so prolifically that I'd probably have 3 poems on the wall by the time I kind of rouse out of sleep. Or in between sleep, and I was getting in that kind of rhythm, and then I'll stop for a while because of whatever was going on inside the jail, or you know, pertaining to me or whatever. So it took a bit of while. I could say altogether maybe about 20 years plus it took me to compile everything that I've compiled. Yeah.
Well, listen, we're going to have your first one because you have such a style about you. And I no doubt what maybe frightened them is they're thinking maybe we have another Malcolm X here who has a radical mind, you know, and knows what he wants to do. And he knows the system and he's against the system. So that's okay, because our writing always challenges the status quo. That's what makes writers stand out. I mean, in a country where you have good writers, you're going to have a lot of creativity, a lot of changes, and the ability to move the society into another state of thinking. So we thank God for your life, even though it had to happen in those situations. Okay, listen, let's start with the African Holocaust. Yeah. Okay, listen, why don't you read that and then give us, you could do 2 things. You could either give us an insight before you start or let us read it and then you tell us what was going on in your mind.
Okay, Africa's Holocaust basically is like they don't really like to speak about, they speak about the Jewish Holocaust, but they don't usually like to speak about what they did to black people. And this is only a snippet, like a drop in the ocean of what they did to black people. And it's not really our history, it's their history, what they did to us. You know what I mean? But
right,
we have a thing called slave trauma that has gone through the generations and so on. And sometimes it's good just to not to forget. If you forget, you can forgive, but if you forget, you let things happen again because you're blind to it. You know what I mean? So this is Africa's Holocaust. Oh, when they came, the stop of the heart, the drop of the drum, women fainted, their limbs fell numb. Some fought in vain while others did run from the ghost-faced pirates who came to snatch mother from daughter and father from son. With chains, daggers, and musket gun, they raped, pillaged, burned down the village before dragging us to their vessels of doom. Bloody, shackled, beaten, bruised, kicking, screaming, dazed, confused. Chains cutting and rattling in the hold that stank, profiteers of our tears, Lloyds of London, Thomas Cook and Barclays Bank. Vomit and piss washed our septic wounds, suffocation by defecation. We prayed the Lord would throw us overboard like the infected cargo who sleep in watery graves. The black, the beautiful and lucky slaves, the dark, the bay, the cold display, the tar and branding and come what may, the weighing, the flogging, the checking, the batched, paired for breeding, the strongest matched. Families forced to perform incestuous acts like beasts upon the plain, the horror, the guilt, the unspoken shame. Fields of malnourished children picking cotton or chopping cane, slave labor that built England, America, Portugal, France, and Spain, which killed indigenous tribes of the Caribbean. 100 million Africans murdered or displaced over 400 years, a sea of flesh, blood, and tears. No reparations, no apology, the final insult. No law was broken at the time. To commit such genocide back then was fine, apparently. Okay, so that's that. Africa's Holocaust.
Do you know what? I think you need to go to an open mic. I'm saying now, I'm going to see what I could see when the next one is. Because your words are so vivid. They capture the atmosphere of what was going on there, but go straight into our heart. Yeah. And it's quite frightening, but also enlightening. Do you understand what I'm saying? It enlightens your mind. My God, this was what happened. Because sometimes people close their mind unless you hear it. You see, what I love about Ireland is that it's a land of saints and scholars. It's also a land of writers. So therefore, you can get through what you can't get through them in conversation, you can get through in poetry and in the spoken word. And you definitely painted a picture there. Now,
well, the strange thing is that, not, don't mean to cut to you, that when I'm in prison, I used to do a lot of, on a lot of different kind of occasions for poetry and art and so on. I was life rep, wing rep, diversity rep, and everything else going on in the jail. And I remember the IRA and other people that they claim as terrorists were actually crying when I read that poem to them. So I know, you know, even the governor was kind of, you know, they let me out to go and act in the World Court Theatre and to express myself in, you know, the genre of poetry, because they probably thought that's something that I had to do. So I did a little bit of that, but I didn't really follow through. So I'm trying to make up for it now, really.
Well, listen, it was such a privilege to hear that. And the fact you even call it the African Holocaust. And, oh, gosh, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for bringing it again to my mind that this thing is still something that we need to grapple with. But more importantly, you need to paint the picture in people's head as to what actually happened with your word, which you've done so eloquently. So let's go on from there. So you had a lot of people that was that encouraged you. And you yourself, you were obviously readers, good readers. Good writers are good readers. You agree with that, don't you? And, yeah.
I think there's some truth in it. I think there's some truth in it. There's probably some writers, like especially a lot of people that write raps and you know, grime and things, that probably are not very well read, but they're great artists, you know, when it comes to writing and expression. So I think yeah, true from both sides. Definitely reading helps your writing ability. I was well into, I tell you who really got me to write in a structured format. She doesn't know me, she's never heard of me, probably never will. Warsan Shaya, Somali poetess. Do you know her?
I don't know her actually, but I will look her up now that you've said that.
Oh, please do, yeah. She's fantastic. She's something else, yeah. Even Auden, Stop the Clocks, and different people like that. You know, I think there was a person called Hughes, I think it was Irish actually. Was it John Hughes?
John Hughes, yeah.
But Warsan Shaya, she kind of brought things home to my spirit, where I could write, I could finally write the way I really wanted to get it down, you know what I mean? I think she was kind of raw and unapologetic, and yeah, that she just had a style that resonated with me, you know.
And so you yourself, from this particular poem, I'm going to ask you what we call a very straightforward question. What were you hoping that people would take away when you perform such a poem?
I hoped that people wouldn't forget, like, for instance, we have this thing called Carnival, as you know, right? In Trinidad, Jamaica, Brazil, places like that. And it seems like we've gone on to just thinking about excitement and drinking and eating and dancing. Not much is given to the actual suffering of what we, and even the survival, you know, the hustle to survive, to be, when they really wanted to blot us out, and in some cases still do, because like in Cameroon with France and places like this and Mali, and where they're doing atrocities still, France will be doing atrocities, or America will be doing atrocities and causing strife in Libya and different places in the world. They really want to wipe out anything dark, you know what I mean? And I'm not making any apology for saying that. It speaks for itself. This is what's going on, you know what I mean? And I think I wanted to get some truth out. No matter what race, no matter what race you are, no matter what religion you are, you have the right to humanity and self-existence. You understand? And I want to kind of highlight things that are going on in the world, and exposing and shaming, naming and shaming. Also, we can't always be too serious. We have to be lighting up a bit. So I do have some more romantic kind of things, like I sent you one today called Once You Had Me. I don't actually have it in front of me, but yeah, you know, but I think sometimes we have to get back to the pains and not forgetting certain things, you know, because this is what made us, this is what made us here, the struggle. So we have to keep that struggle alive, as well as long as there's inhuman things going on in the world, we have to write about it, we have to expose it, and you know, tell it how it is, you know. That's where I am, really.
Right. I'm just really amazed. What do you have another one to share with us that we could just gain more of you?
A much shorter one. I think I wrote this in about 5 minutes, but I like this one. It's a little different. You could say it's a little bit dark or macabre or something, but because I'm worried about, it's called The Beautiful Mushroom, and it is speaking about nuclear holocaust, really. I really shouldn't really spell it out, but as we're limited for time, I've done so. So it's called The Beautiful Mushroom. A thousand suns fell out the sky. The air was crisp and still. Its moldered sparrow lay lifeless with a charred worm in its cracked bill. No dogs barked. Stiff as mannequins, children neither giggled nor played. Not even a squeak of a single swing's chain. Hope waited, but waited in vain. But joy would not be tickled nor roused, for in every desolate dwelling place, death was housed.
Yes, good Lord. There's so much in what you're saying. How can we lay hold of this book so that we could walk with you this journey?
I'll make concerted efforts to finish my illustration. It should be out definitely in about 2 weeks, Bar Publications. I'll try and forward you the website later on, because it's way deep in my files that I haven't actually had time to memorize. And you can let listeners know whenever you have time. I mean, I'm glad you come back again. You said there was another format that you have. I'm glad you come back again and read and be more organized for you. Because I was traveling through the world. I've been to like you know, 3 countries since I spoke to you.
Right. And do you know, when you get to those countries, what are the influences you have? Do they influence your poetry? How do they influence your poetry?
Well, I've written about Sawat in Pakistan. My friends got that poem again like years ago. I think the main thing is I seem to influence people when I'm around them. And I remember going to a place called Hujra where men used to gather. They had their own eating huts and so on. And they used to come in there smoking hashish and some of them drinking. And they realized that I didn't drink or smoke and I had my reasons for it. And I would explain my reasons for it when they tried to pass it over to me. And I remember within a week or two, they all stopped smoking, they all stopped drinking and probably became better for it. I like different cultures. I like to move around and I like meeting people. And some of these people are the most hospitable people you could ever meet, you know, despite what the press may say about certain countries and so on. I mean, I remember traveling and even speaking to some officials and saying to them, look, you people have steeds of war and everything. And you've got children that basically, they're malnutrition, they're cold, they're in sub-zero conditions. And you know, you have all these pickups and all these vehicles and so on, but you're not looking after the women and children. Why haven't you built these huts, even out of mud, and put stoves in there to keep them warm and make showers for them to, you know, to keep them clean and so on? And people said, don't say nothing. You promised not to speak. You won't open your big trap. And I said, well, I had to say what I had to say. And the people said to me, stand up, get up. So I get up and thinking, okay, this is it. And they said to me, you came here in our country and you're telling us what to do. And we thank you for it.
Then oh, wow.
Yeah. And said they'll give me all the money I need, all the houses, all the pickup, anything I need to help the people, because everyone comes here, they either want ore or they want minerals from the country, something from the country, and they don't really want to give anything. And usually they go through other organizations to do charity, even if they do come to do charity. They don't actually go through the officials. It's like they undermine the officials. And because I'm talking to the officials, they actually, you know, respected that. And the only problem is I went to, strangely enough, to Nigeria, where, you know, I was extradited on behalf of the request of the British government and put into jail. I didn't get back to seeing the people or helping them. But at least I put it in their mind what needs to be done, you know? And I always go against the grain if I see something wrong. So I remember some ladies sitting in mud, drinking cane juice and whatever, and the men was inside a beautiful shop, in the dry, in the warm. And I remember standing up and saying, what the heck is going on here? And someone was translating for me and said, your women, your aunties, your mothers, your sisters, your cousins, your daughters are out in the mud and you men are in the warm, you know, drinking and feasting. I said, what kind of thing is that? Is this what has become of your culture? And all the men came out and let the women in.
Do you know what? You are just an amazing person. I am going to have you on. My time has come on. I'm on a Zoom, so I don't want it to kind of cut us off. But, you know, there was a missionary who had a similar impact, and he'd been my part of Africa. And the men, they went to hunt. The women cooked the food, and they gathered around the men, they ate the food and were chucking bones to the women. And this missionary said to them, just like you said, what do you think you're doing? And they all came sheepishly, apologized, went to hunt another game, cook it and fed the thing. So I salute you as a man that has a radical view, and I want to thank you for this opportunity. We're going to hear more about your book, and I know that I'm going to hear more about you. And when I find out about that, it normally comes on every month, open mic in Irish Writers Centre. I will send it to you, and I hope you're around because you're traveling. Your travel to go and give them one or two of your poem. Listen, it's a privilege and an honour to meet with someone so radical, and there's a reason. I see a Mandela, I see a Malcolm X, I see a revolution inside of you through your words that will change life. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much for your time.
No, I think there's going to be a lot of things that you're going to be doing. Thank you so much for that. A special thanks to Oscar Samuel for the interview we've just had. And in addition to this, normally we will have some kind of music after the interview, but because Oscar Samuel is also a musician, so I want to take this opportunity to introduce you to two of his work that is set to music. And so the next two, first of all, The African Holocaust, and the next one was Once You Heard Me, set to music. And so relax and enjoy. And I'm sure we're going to hear more of this wonderful, amazing writer with his words are just like bullet that gets you right in the heart. And just enjoy that.
Africa's Holocaust. Oh, when they came, the stop of the heart, the drop of the drum. Women fainted, their limbs fell numb. Some fought in vain while others did run from the ghost-faced parents who came to snatch mother from daughter and father from son. With chains, daggers and musket gun, they raped, pillaged, burned down the village before dragging us through their vessels of doom. Bloody, shackled, beaten, bruised, kicking, screaming, dazed, confused. Chains cutting and rattling in the hole that stank. Profiteers of our tears, Lloyds of London, Thomas Cook and Barclays Bank. Vomit and piss washed our septic wounds. Suffocation by defecation. We prayed the Lord would throw us overboard like their infected cargo, who sleep in watery graves. The black, the beautiful and lucky slaves. The dark, the bay, the cold display, the tar and branding and come what may. The weighing, the flogging, the checking, the batched, paired for breeding, the strongest matched. Families forced to perform incestuous acts like beasts upon the plain. The unspoken, shh, the unspoken shame. Fields of malnourished children picking cotton or chopping cane. Slave labor that built England, America, Portugal, France and Spain, which killed indigenous tribes of the Caribbean. 100 million Africans murdered or displaced over 400 years. A sea of flesh, blood and tears. No reparations, no apology. The final insult, no law was broken at the time. To commit such genocide back then was fine, apparently. For the dawn wipes serenity from the sun's sleepy eye, and love cursed the morn that swallowed my night. Once, passion's sheets were a tangle of flames, condensation dripped off the windows. Our bed has since imploded like a small universe. Breathless clouds emptied their icy cheeks, a hail of tears pelted heaven. Once you had me. Your heart beats in my bosom. Log fires have become embers. Weeping willows have dried. The homeless stir. Working girls sing to forget their integrity. Gift of the gap failed. My words a soup of letters lost in translation. The romance of sunsets were not picturesque enough to save us. Wild pigs piss on truffles, torrents flushed lilies from flooded hills. Your strokes were like Picasso's brush. Once you had me. My canvas was ripped from affection's easel. I am the suffocating vine hanging around life. Did I want too much? I need to feel you. The consolation is pain. Your eyes are flashes of light. Your voice the wind that speaks to me, even in thunder. Everything happens in cycles. Spiders crochet the dusky leaves. Children retire from play. The fragrance of cooking pots torments vacant bellies. Little girls believe in fairies. God forbid the day they discover heartbreak. I sleep better in your shirt. They match your shorts. Your toothbrush tastes of fresh kisses. I pinch myself where you touched me. Your shoes are too big to fill. The dog sits by the door, tail wagging. You are the world. All things are possible. I read the future in yesterday's stars. The old cherry tree is blossoming again. To all things their own season. Nothing really dies. When you come home, it would be as if you never left. Then I will reiterate love's refrain. Once you had me. Stones are the ruins of my indigenous bones. The receding grass is where they've ripped out my beautiful hair in tufts. These human paths are the lifelines of my ancient soul. When they trespass, they erode my pounding heart. Where trees flourish, now men of iron and steel bear arms. As plunderers, they pillage without conscience, tears, or qualms. This foul air is the poisonous fume suffocating me. This landscape is the bloody rape of the dying dales. I wish you did not see.